This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, in for Terry Gross. David Johansen likes to joke that when he wrote the song Personality Crisis for his 70s rock band New York Dolls, he had no idea it would become the story of his life. Johansen was the lead singer for the Dolls, who earned cult status as the forerunners of punk and metal rock, as much for their campy drag queen look as their hard-driving sound. He later had a solo career. Then, in the 80s, he performed and recorded as his alter ego Buster Poindexter, a martini-swigging, pompadoured crooner whose 1987 dance number Hot 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 was a chart-topper. In addition to making music, Johansen has appeared in a number of films, including Married to the Mob, Bill Murray's Scrooged, and The Tick Code. Now Johansen has transformed himself once again. He and his new band, the Harry Smiths, have a new album of blues with songs from such artists as Lightnin' Hopkins, Sonny Boy Williamson, and Muddy Waters. Four of the tunes are culled from the 1952 anthology of American folk music by Harry Smith, the eclectic folk music archivist. Let's listen to the first cut on the new album, David Johansen and the Harry Smiths. This is James Alley Blues.
Times ain't nothing like they used to be. Oh, times ain't nothing like they used to be. And I'm telling y'all the truth, oh, take it for me. I done seen better days, but I ain't putting up with these. I done seen better days, but I'm putting up with thee. I had a much better time with these girls, now I'm so hard to please.
James Alley Blues by Richard Rabbit Brown, performed by David Johansen from his new album David Johansen and the Harry Smiths. David Johansen, welcome to Fresh Air.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a delight to be here.
I really love your voice in James Alley Blues and on other cuts on the album. It has that gravelly but rich and resonant sound at the same time. Do you go to a different place vocally when you sing the blues than you did as a rock singer or, say, as Buster Poindexter?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because there's so many things that kind of add up to where you are, if you know what I'm saying. But one thing that I noticed, I was watching on that Tennessee channel, you know, they have the country music.
Mm-hmm.
What is it, TNN maybe? The Nashville Network. And there was a show with George Jones, and he had Merle Haggard on. And they're sitting around chewing the fat, and they have guitars in their laps, and then they say, oh, remember that old song? Let's sing that song. And then they start singing, and there was really no kind of transition from their conversation to their singing voices.
Right, it's just utterly natural, like breathing.
Yeah, and I just thought, you know, that's really beautiful. Why have, like, laryngitis for half of your life when you can just kind of do these things conversationally, you know? So that was kind of a epiphany for me.
Now, the Harry Smiths, that name harkens back to Harry Smith, who was just an amazing, eccentric character, a guy interested in the occult, an ethnographer, an avant-garde filmmaker in the 50s. He was a painter. He was a collector of American folk music and artifacts. How did he figure in your life or imagination?
Well, when I was a kid, you know, we had a couple of Harry Smith albums. You know, I think he had like 8 albums that Smithsonian put out. So we had a couple around the house. I mean, I have older brothers and sisters, and I come from a house where there was a record player that was always on. And so I was familiar with his music. And then, of course, it was re-released a couple of years ago on CD, and there was kind of like a rebirth of interest in it. And then Alan Pepper, who owns The Bottom Line, which is a club in New York, was having his 30th anniversary, and he asked me to do something. And when Alan Pepper asked me, what are you going to call the band? It was about, you know, 2 weeks before the show, and he was going to put an ad in the paper. I just kind of blurted out the Harry Smiths. It wasn't something that I really gave any thought to. But at that time, I thought, well, this is just going to be a one-off show, you know. And it was so well-received, we continue to do it. But the name is really kind of a good shorthand for what we do, you know? I mean, we don't, you know, just do songs from his record collection. We do other songs as well, but they're of that ilk, you know.
Did you ever meet Harry Smith?
Yeah, I met him a couple of times when I was a kid.
Did he make a big impression on you?
In
the flesh?
You know, you look up curmudgeon in the dictionary and you see his picture.
I get it. Did you listen to the blues growing up?
Yeah.
These musicians, Lightnin' Hopkins, Mississippi John Hurt, the Delta stuff.
Yeah. Well, when I was a kid, that was the first music that caught my ear. You know, that was my music. And I think the first record I bought was a Lightnin' Hopkins album or something. And when I was a kid, I grew up in Staten Island, and they used to have a deal called Hoot Night at the JCC. And every Saturday night, they would have this kind of, teenagers singing folk songs and blues songs and stuff. And I used to get in on that.
You'd get up there and sing Delta blues?
Oh, yeah.
And how'd they dig that at the JCC?
Oh, they dug it. You know, it was like a teen scene. It wasn't like for adults, per se. It was like, you know, like a teen thing. Yeah. And everybody was into, folk music and stuff. But I kind of did the bluesier stuff. You know, some people would do like Kingston Trio type stuff and the Greenbrier Boys and stuff like that. And I was more into, Lightnin' Hopkins and things like that.
Well, you'd recorded one of the songs on this new record, Sonny Boy Williamson's Don't Start Me Talking, back in the 70s with your band and the New York Dolls. Why do you revisit this song for the new album?
Well, it's still good. it's funny, you know, it's hard to explain why certain songs are yours, you know, even though you didn't write them, but it's kind of a thing where it's not like I wish I wrote it, but like I could have written it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it just talks to me, and it still makes perfect sense to me. And it's just a song I've loved all my life, and we recorded it, and it came out okay, so we put it on the record. When we recorded the record, I guess we recorded maybe 30 songs or something in the course of 3 days, and then we picked however many are on the record.
I'd like to play both versions of Sonny Boy Williamson's Don't Start Me Talking. First, we're going to hear David Johansen and the Harry Smiths, and then we'll hear the New York Dolls version.
Well, I'm going down to Rosie's, stop at Fannie Mae. I'm going to tell Fannie what I heard her boyfriend say. Don't start me talking, 'cause I'll tell everything I know. I'm gonna break up the scene to find, baby, 'cause somebody's got to go. Well, Jack gave his wife $2, go down and get some marketing. Gets out on the street, old George stopped her. He knocks her down and blackens her eye. Get back home, tell her husband to lie. Don't start me talking, 'cause I'll tell everything I know. I won't break up the scene to find, baby, 'cause somebody's got to go. Talk to Fannie Mae, I'm gonna tell her what I heard her boyfriend say. Well, don't you stop me talking, I'll tell everything I know. I'm gonna break up the scene about you, baby, 'cause somebody's got to go. A jacket with white $2, supposed to get some margin, but she'll get down on the street, you know. Old George stops her first, knocks her down and got her black in her eyes. So when she get back home, tell the husband to lie. Don't stop me talking, oh, I'll tell everything I know. I'm gonna bring this scene and fight with you, baby, 'cause somebody got to go.
It's funny listening to these it's surprising to me how similar the two renditions are. You really feel the blues roots through the rocklets of the New York Dolls. Did you listen to the Dolls version again before recording with the Harry Smiths?
No.
You don't sit around listening to your old records.
No, but you know, the Dolls as a kind of a democracy, everybody brought something to it, you know, and I think my, what I brought to it, besides being like the lyricist or whatever, and was a kind of a blues background and an R&B kind of interest, you know. So we put all those elements together, and that's how it came out.
The New York Dolls version does have that swagger, that kind of glam rock swagger to it. I guess you end up swaggering no matter what when you're wearing those 4-inch platform boots, right?
Yeah, teetering, I think, is the word.
I especially like the cover of that 1999 release, New York Dolls Live. Do you remember it? It's a full-length shot of you superimposed in the foreground over a very dramatic photo of the Brooklyn Bridge at night. And you, by the way, are way bigger than the bridge, and you're in white platform boots and tight jeans and a midriff shirt.
I have never seen that record, so. It's funny because the Dolls, we made two records, and out of the, you know, we recorded probably 25 songs in our career, and out of that, they've made, you know, 25 records, so it's hard to keep track of them all.
The New York Dolls were way before the whole punk rock and macho rock star in lipstick era. How did you get into the campy drag queen style?
Well, when we were kids in the East Village, you know, it was, you know, I guess I moved to the East Village in about 68. And the Dolls started, I guess, in about 71 or 72. And the East Village was kind of like a hotbed of revolution, and the liberation movements, you know, were springing up all over the place. And, you know, Women's Lib and gay liberation and every kind of liberation you can imagine. And, we were just kind of playing for that audience, you know. So we were kind of a product of all those ideas.
Did you guys set out to make this political, gender-bending statement? Or did you think, hey, this is what rock and roll is all about, being flamboyant?
Yeah, both. Both. You know, I mean, that was our idea of what a rock and roll band should be. But also, you know, we were reflecting an audience that was very kind of a local scene, if you know what I mean. It wasn't exactly like a national movement.
I think the first performance of the New York Dolls was at the Bottom Line, and by all accounts that I've read, the gig was kind of a disaster. What happened?
Well, we did play the Bottom Line. Yeah, it wasn't one of our first gigs, but I don't know, everything went wrong. We played, and there was a bomb scare, and a couple of the guys, we used to fight a lot in the band.
Fight how?
You know, just like beat the hell out of each other.
On stage?
And, no, usually on stage, usually off stage. So I think like a mirror got broken in the dressing room, and there was a bomb scare, and they had to clear the place. It was just a pretty disastrous night, and Alan Pepper declared that we would never work there again. I would never work there again, and hence I've been working there ever since.
Were other shows somewhat out of control? I understand the police routinely showed up at Dolls gigs.
Yeah, you know, and we would get picketed, and it was insane. I mean, I really didn't understand what was going on, to tell you the truth. And I didn't really take it that seriously. But I remember one time we were flying into Memphis from, I don't know where, from Texas or something, and somebody had a newspaper, and it said that we were going to be arrested, and I thought, oh yeah, sure, you know. And when you just know it, I got arrested on stage at the Memphis Civic Center for inciting a riot, and by being there, I guess, and went to, you know, the Memphis Rikers, whatever it is, dressed kind of like Liza Minnelli. It was an unfortunate situation.
My guest is David Johansen. He was the lead singer for the 70s pre-punk punk rock band, the New York Dolls. Later, he performed as Buster Poindexter, kind of a tuxedo-wearing lounge lizard swing band leader. And now he has a new band and a new album of straight blues. It's called David Johansen and the Harry Smiths. We're going to take a short break now, David, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Great. Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is David Johansen. He was one of the original members of the 70s band New York Dolls. His new CD, David Johansen and the Harry Smiths, is a collection of the blues. The Dolls' first tour was in England, in London, and the original drummer in the band, Billy Mercia, partied way too hard. He mixed pills and booze and ended up drowning in a bathtub. Somebody put him in to revive him after he passed out. How did his death hit you?
Oh, it's, you know, it seems so sordid now, but I was just, you know, I mean, it's hard to describe how I felt because I was kind of in shock, you know, I mean, literally. So it was, you know, one of the most horrible things that had happened to me. I mean, not that it happened to me, it happened to him, but, you know, my response to it was probably stronger or as strong as anything that had ever occurred in my life.
Well, other members of the Dolls had drug habits, heroin, alcohol. I think two other members eventually died because of it. How much were drugs a part of your experience then?
There's more dead dolls than Spinal Tap. What was the question?
How much were drugs a part of your rock experience?
You know, I was probably as bad as the next guy, but I survived it, you know. So, you know, at the time, you would think, like, somebody caught a tough break or something, but it would be impossible to kind of look at your own situation. But eventually I kind of came to my senses as far as that's concerned.
You just decided you'd had enough?
Yeah. You know, I started reading Carl Jung, and I decided that I was clinging to an outmoded kind of theory.
Mm-hmm. I think it was Malcolm McLaren, who later managed the Sex Pistols, who was your manager for the New York Dolls for a while, wasn't he?
Well, he says. But he was kind of like our haberdasher for a while, and he made some clothes for us. And then he went back to England and said he was our manager, you know, so he could get some poor kids to come under his Svengali-like influence, which he rehearsed on us, but it didn't take. So he went and found some new kids to to work on.
And to practice his magic.
But Malcolm was like a friend, you know. And at one point, he came over, and we were kind of like in a shambles. And he's very kind of pragmatic, and he would say, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make a list, and then we're going to check off the list as we do everything, and then we're going to take a gig, and then we're going to practice, and we're going to, you know, he was kind of like that. But he wasn't really our manager, but he was just kind of like a pal.
Did he have, though, a vision for the band? Ideas about what you were supposed to do, how you're supposed to evolve?
No. You mean musically?
Or in terms of stage.
No, he
doesn't
really know much about music, but he was kind of, what do they call those guys, situationists or something. He had all these kind of like academic kind of ideas about revolution, if you know what I'm saying, that he got out of a book. And I think one time he met like Johnny the Red and had his picture taken with him. And his stuff was really kind of an academic approach, whereas we were kind of like really living it and inventing it as we went along. So I think he found us like kind of a fascinating and wanted some of that juice. You know what I'm saying?
I think he had this idea that you would the band would perform in front of a giant Soviet flag, right?
And that wasn't really his idea, but he facilitated it. It was our idea to have a communist party. which I thought was really funny, like, as opposed to the Communist Party, it would be a Communist Party. And we would dress in red and have a Soviet flag hanging behind us because, it's just because of that whole idea of the Cold War was such a sham, but people weren't ready to believe that yet.
And did you perform in front of
we
a
did,
play?
Yes.
How'd
we
it go
did.
Over?
And, well, people you would think would know better or would have a sense of humor were, like, shocked. And it was like communism was kind of like a curse word, you know. I learned a lot. I found out people who I thought had it together were had a little ways to go. But a lot of people loved it. Don't get me wrong. A lot of people thought, this is a riot.
Let's play another New York Dolls song, Personality Crisis. You wrote the lyrics, right?
Yeah, and it turned out to be the story of my life. Isn't that funny?
Well, would you like to say anything about it before we listen?
It's a good song.
Okay, this is Personality Crisis from the 1973 album, New York Dolls. David Johansen's new CD is David Johansen and the Harry Smiths. We'll hear more of our conversation in the second half of the show. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave. Let's get back to our interview with David Johansen. His band, New York Dolls, was the predecessor to such punk and rock acts as the Sex Pistols and the Ramones. Since then, he's had a solo career, and he's also performed as the Lounge Lizard band leader Buster Poindexter. Now David Johansen is singing the blues. His new CD is David Johansen and the Harry Smiths. You had a solo career for about 6 years. You toured with the David Johansen band. I'm curious, when I look back over the other phases in your career, there was always an element of performance to it, of persona. When you were just on your own up there as David Johansen, was it a whole different experience?
From what I had done previously, you mean?
Sure, from, say, being a New York Doll.
Yeah, it was different. I mean, because, well, you know, the David Johansen band kind of, I guess it was more successful than the New York Dolls. And I kind of went through this period when I was a doll that, you know, I got really obnoxious and really kind of fell for it. And one day I had this revelation that I was really a schmuck. And David Johansen was kind of more of a pared down thing. It was more kind of a proletariat kind of a band, I guess.
What had you fallen for, the whole image?
Yeah, I really thought I was hot stuff for a couple of years there, you know. But not maybe 18 months.
The rock star thing.
Yeah, you know what happens, you know, you start isolating, and you start drawing away from people, and then you just start being with people who have the same idiotic ideas that you have, and you kind of foster each other's misconceptions of the universe, and it's a bad place to be. It's good to have more of a well-rounded kind of society around. You know, it's good to know a butcher and a cop and a pimp and whatever, you know, as opposed to just being with people who are as stupid as you are.
And so your solo career was about that?
Yeah, it was more of a thing where I think, like, you know, blue-collar people really got into it, right. And also academics enjoyed it. You know, it was something that was for everybody.
I'd like to talk about your Buster Poindexter period now. He's kind of hard to pin down. I guess I could describe him as a lounge lizard type band leader. He came before the whole lounge kitsch revival with the Brian Setzer Orchestra and others. Could you describe him for us?
You know, it's funny because whenever I do something, then, like, about 2 or 3 years later, they give it a name and it becomes like a movement, you know, and usually that's when I get out. But When I started doing the Buster thing, I was traveling around the country in a Dodge Ram van with about six guys. And our typical day, we would get up, travel 400 miles, open for a heavy mental act in a hockey rink, get back in the van, travel 400 miles, sleep, get up, and do the same thing again. And essentially, these shows were kind of, I called them Hitler Youth rallies, because all the kids in the audience would be like pumping their fists, and I just, you know, and I would say something that I thought was amusing, and people would look at me like, hey, dude, what? And in my neighborhood in New York, in Gramercy Park, there was a bar called Tramps, and they had a lot of great old blues singers there who would come in and do residences, like Big Joe Turner would be there for a month, and Charles Brown would be there for a month, and Big Maybelle would be there for a month. And on Monday, the bar would be open, but the showroom, and there was a little showroom in the back, it would be dark. So I decided I was going to do this little kind of cabaret, if you will, for four Mondays. And at the time, I was listening to a lot of, like, jump blues and Joe Liggins and stuff like that. And I decided I'd do some of that. But also, I'd throw in, like, a Broadway song, like The Seven Deadly Virtues from Camelot and stuff like that. And I started doing that. And then I changed my name, which is it's an old nickname of mine, but
Buster Poindexter is?
Yeah. Like, if you look at my old records, it's like the Buster Poindexter publishing company and stuff is on the old records. But I decided to use that name so people wouldn't be, like, screaming for my songs, you know, that they were familiar with.
You mean New York Doll songs or your solo songs?
Yeah, Doll songs and Johansson songs. Yeah. So I just wanted to be free, you know, to do what I wanted to do. I like to do this from time to time, just kind of like, it's like Etch-a-Sketch, just turn it upside down and start over again. So by the fourth Monday, the place was packed, and it was really strictly word of mouth kind of a thing. And then I started playing there on the weekends, and then I was making as much as I was schlepping around the country in a van, which is not pleasant. I really didn't have much of a life at that point. So I decided, well, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm just going to walk to work. This place was like two blocks from my house. And I figured, well, if I could create an act that could only play New York, then they could never drag me out again. But we had a hit, so I had to go out, and it all started over again.
Your sorry luck.
We have these cursed hits every once in a while.
How quickly did you develop this this look for him, the poofed hair?
You know, it's
the
not like a Well, you know what happened was I just cut all my hair off, you know, at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I think I started with a crew cut, and then I kind of like grew into a pompadour. But a lot of people say, "Oh, well, it was a persona or something," but I have a friend who's a singer named Elliot Murphy, and he used to say that Buster Poindexter is more like David Johansen than David Johansen is, because I could just say whatever kind of came to my mind, and I started to get an audience that had read a book, you know, and it kind of changed everything for me.
So, and you couldn't have done that back in the days when you were playing the heavy metal bands, or even
right.
The New York
Dolls.
Well,
you see what happens when you're in that rock and roll world. Which is great when you're a kid, but when you see people who have kind of like grown older and they're still doing it and they're still doing the same thing they were doing 20 years ago or 30 years ago, it's kind of, you know, for me, it's kind of soul crushing, you know, so I have to kind of expand with the universe or else I kind of become ill.
Let's listen to a Buster Poindexter song that I like. This is of the 40s ilk. This song is Screwy Music from the 1987 release Buster Poindexter.
Excellent.
Did you know this song from your own record collection?
Yeah, it's a Jimmy Lunsford record.
Good. This is my guest, David Johansen, as Buster Poindexter singing Screwy Music.
At the State Asylum on the second floor, I talked with a patient, room 234. I said, "You don't look crazy, can't tell why you're here." He sort of looked at
at me and smiled and whispered in my ear, I'm nuts about square music. I'm screwy about nutty rhythm. I'm dilly over all silly melodies, crazy as a loon can be. I'm daffy about goofy tempo. I'm goofy about daffy changes. I'm dippy over all dizzy harmony written in a minor key. I love to hear sounds that are queer. I'm eccentric, they say. There's a boot in a flute or a mellow moon in cello. I'm nuts about screwy music. I'm screwy about nutty rhythm. I'm dilly over all silly melodies, crazy as a loon can be.
If you're just joining us, my guest is musician David Johansen. He was a member of the cult glam rock band, the New York Dolls, in the 70s. In the 80s, he performed under the name of Buster Poindexter with his Banshees. He has a new album of straight blues, David Johansen and the Harry Smiths. You've had parts in movies for decades, kind of over the course of your career. You were in, back in the 80s, you were in Bill Murray's film, Scrooged. You've been in a couple other films. How'd the acting happen? Was that something serendipitous?
Yeah, well, you know, Robert Frank, he's a photographer. He made a film, and I was in it. And it seemed before that people always used to say, well, have you been in a film? And I would say no, and they would say, oh, okay, thanks. And then it was kind of like, well, then I had been in a film. It was called Candy Mountain. And then Bill Murray was coming down to the bottom line and watching the Buster show, and he's kind of demented himself, so he really got it. And he asked if I wanted to be in Scrooged, and I said, sure. And then I've been in some other movies over the years, you know, but it's not like a thing that I go and pound the pavement for. You know, usually if someone calls and they know what they want and it's me, then it's fine. But as far as like going to auditions and sitting in a room with fluorescent lights and trying to emote, I'm not really so good at that.
You've got so many albums and bands and personas and styles behind you. Is there part of music making that you most enjoy now?
Well, you know, now, like when I'm doing this Harry Smith thing, it's so non-aerobic. You know, I'm sitting there usually just playing the guitar and singing. So it's not like I'm hoofing, if you know what I mean. And it gives me a chance to kind of let my mind wander, and it goes to, it's almost like an out-of-body experience, and it's great out there.
I'd like to end with a song from your new album. Do you have a favorite?
Oh, gee. You know which one I like? The Louise Johnson one, On the Wall.
Okay, great. Let's end with On the Wall. This is my guest, David Johansen, from his new album, David Johansen and the Harry Smiths. And David Johansen, thank you so much for talking with me today on Fresh Air.
Thank you, Barbara.
Well, I'm going to Memphis, stop at Jim Canaan's Dam. Dirty women trying to cheat a man. Yeah, I'm going down to Memphis, stop at Jim Canaan. I'm going to show them women, honey, how to treat a man. I said you ain't good looking and you don't just find it. That's the kind of people make fun of you. Most any time because you ain't good looking. You don't dress so fine.
David Johansen's new CD is David Johansen and the Harry Smiths. This is Fresh Air.